Hello, welcome to Sinner Saint Sister. This is a space where searching, hurting, faithful, curious people come together and ask hard questions and listen to wise guests share how they have lived life deeply. There are a couple of things that you can do that really help out the show. One of them is if this episode is something that blesses you, can you please send it to a friend? Another thing is that if you really liked it, then could you please leave a 5-star review and write something nice? You can follow along at YouTube/Allison Sullivan for some really fun extras. Find me on Instagram at Allison M. Sully and TikTok at Sullivan Family TikTok. Thanks for being here. I hope you hear something today that lets you know you are loved and helps you love one another. Welcome to Sinner Saint Sister. I know that what I'm about to say won't be for everyone, because it will be obvious to many of you. But if you run a little skittish, scooch in. So, ever since my quarantine era, I do most things with AirPods in. Sleep, anxiety. Errands, introversion. Chores, boredom. I couldn't find my AirPods the other day. I blame teenagers. And I ran my errands without them. And a lady in line behind me at the grocery store, she told me about how her oldest is about to leave home, and we teared up together about how awful / fantastic it is. And then, someone at Target, holding 2 shirts under her chin, asked me which color I liked the best. And then, a person at the post office told me a knock-knock joke. Now, I think it's possible that it's causation and not just correlation that I caught myself whistling making dinner when I got home. Something I'm appalled I have to do every night, by the way. And I also let in an extra person in traffic. I feel like a hero when I let in one. I'm like, everyone saw that, right? But what I want to say is this. The world, it's friendlier than the internet. I know that there are so many lovely corners of the internet where strangers are playful and advocate for one another. But it's available to us in person too. And I just wanted to say that in case anyone's forgotten, like me. I needed the reminder. I've been missing it. I'm not very sciencey, but I believe there's something not just magical, but biological, how these small connections make us feel more energized, more resilient, more united, how they improve our mental health and make us feel less lonely. It's hard to hate up close, isn't it? Proximity is so important. But community, that word that gets thrown around so much, it's more than just a geographical location. It's more than just people moving alongside one another. Community, it is a people with proximity, yes. It's a community that's giving and taking. Community is what happens to our hearts in between the giving and the taking, because community, it's an exchange. I try hard not to be bossy, so I'm not telling anyone to ditch their AirPods. You know how to take care of you and the intricate individual balance work of what is needed to stay healthy. But I was surprised by how healing it felt to engage when I thought I was healing by not engaging. On the show today is Regina Boyd, a licensed mental health counselor and author of the book Leaving Loneliness Behind, and you're going to love what she has to say today. Hello, Regina Boyd. It is such a pleasure to have you on the show today. You are a licensed mental health counselor and a marriage and family therapist. And you have also just written a book, Leaving Loneliness Behind. And it feels like a really appropriate time to dive into this subject matter. I know that people are struggling all the way around. I'm really excited to learn about your work and excited to meet you in person. Welcome to Sinner Saint Sister.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
You're so welcome. So if you could tell us a little bit, for people who might not know of you and know about your work, if you could give us a more personal introduction by telling us a little bit about who and what you love, that would be awesome.
Sure. So I am a wife and a mom. So I love my family, you know, that God has blessed me with. And I would just say there's so many friends and community we have here in the Orlando area that I'm so grateful for, extended family. So I would just say, yeah, love right now, loving this stage. My daughter is 6 years old and it's the coolest stage ever because everything is fun and exciting. She's kind of creating her own social life, her own friends. Mm-hmm. And it's so great to watch that happen. And getting to see my husband be an incredible dad is really great. So yeah, I would say loving my family and just loving getting to spend time with friends and family probably are the main things.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense that you are diving deep into relationships right now and then simultaneously writing about loneliness. The antidote to loneliness is this companionship, this friendship, these connections and strong ties. By the way, I taught school before I was doing whatever the heck I'm doing now. And my favorite year teaching was teaching first grade. Six-year-olds are my favorite humans on the planet. They're so wonderful.
It's so great. And I used to work in a high school for a few years and mm-hmm. we would work with the partner schools. It was a diocesan high school. So we would work with the partner schools and head over there from time to time. And I remember whenever I'd walk through one of the elementary schools, like random kindergartner or first grader would jump out of line, give you a hug. Like, I'm a perfect stranger, you know? And it really was the best. Yeah. It's something so
but
cool.
I either like the color that you're wearing today or your earrings are pretty or you seem nice. So why not? I'm going to follow that impulse. It's great.
Yeah.
I am. So there's this sweet spot in parenting that's after toddler and before teenager. And so this is such a fun stage. Just lean all the way in. So great. So great. It does keep getting better. So I don't mean to make teenagers sound daunting. I'm having a blast, but it's definitely hard work.
Yes. Yes.
So
I have heard.
We are experiencing maybe it's new definitions of loneliness. It's not like loneliness is any foreign concept to us, but we know that people are spending more and more time alone, so much so that we've heard this phrase thrown around, that it's need to be named. So we've heard this phrase, the loneliness epidemic. Will you explain what is happening in our culture in such a noticeable way that we've named it? And what do you think the possible reasons for that are?
I think there's so many factors at play. Even before the pandemic, there were increased rates of loneliness, like you mm-hmm. mentioned, people feeling more isolated. Part of it, I think, has to do with busyness. We are just more busy as a culture in general. We are able to fill our time with a lot more things. So in some ways, technology has helped us, but in other ways, it hasn't helped as much because we're more available to our work or our responsibilities. Mm-hmm. We're also more available to certain distractions through, you know, Netflix or social media. And so we're filling our time in different ways than maybe even 50 years ago when people would, you know, walk around the neighborhood, socialize with their neighbors in that during those gaps of time. And so we've lost little connections along the way. I think also for our young people, again, before the pandemic, young people had passed the elderly as the loneliness group of people in our society. And I think part of that has to do, again, with how we're connecting, how we're relating to one another. I think people give social media a bit of a bad rap. I certainly think you can find real, authentic friendships online through social media. I think it's a great way to stay in touch with people, especially people who aren't close and within your proximity in your area. And at the same time, I think that because our young people are availing themselves to these ways of interacting, it can be really easy for them to do that comparison game.
Right.
And they're doing it at a level without the developmental skills and capacity, because even as adults, we fall prey to that, mm-hmm. to think about, oh my gosh, they're doing this amazing vacation. Why can't I afford a vacation? Or, you know, why are they hanging out together and they didn't invite me? And so imagine doing that as a young person without those extra cognitive abilities to be able to reason and say, well, there could be lots of other reasons why this is happening. And so I think those are two of the big main contributing factors of we learned how to relate in different ways, and we haven't been able to catch up to making sure that we're really tuning in the ways that are important and helpful for us.
Yeah. It's interesting how technology can make us feel more connected. And yet there's something about it that isn't, I don't know if it's dopamine related or what, but it's that real connection it's not a good enough substitute. I think I was listening to, I don't know if it was Dr. Brené Brown or her guest, but they were saying we might have 3,000 friends, but we don't have anyone to feed our cat if we leave town.
Yes.
And so there's not that real coffee date that's happening. We're scrolling and it's just not doing what it's supposed to or what it's intended to. As you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, I'm a grown adult and I still feel addicted, that I'm still and influenced by that. These addictions, these apps are designed to be addicting. And so even with all of my wisdom around how I should be spending my time, it's still difficult for me to get out into my front yard instead, or to take a walk around the block instead and say hi to my neighbors. How much of that is a factor that I wish I was out doing more things. I wish I was out making more simple connections, but I'm a little stuck in an addictive way.
Yeah, it's a fine line, you know, because certainly I don't want to give the impression that we need to cut ourselves off from social media or technology or whatever it is. And at the same time, are we being intentional with our time? Are we really thinking about, am I fitting in that time with the people who I want to grow closer to, or am I not? You know, I think the neighbors are a great example, because even in neighborhoods nowadays, it's just different the way we relate. I think about when I was a kid and how normal it was to just be outside more. And so trying to recreate some of that for my own child is a challenge, depending on how different families live their lifestyles and whatnot. And so I think really it's about, when we're intentional, then we have the ability to seek out other people who do something similar or who want something similar for their own life. And you can help each other in that. But the hard part is planning that out and putting it in your schedule and putting it on the agenda for the week, the month, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are the indicators? Because when this question is maybe specific to me, but what is the difference between maybe enjoying a meal or a movie or a walk around the block by myself? You know, having that time that you enjoy versus denying invitations or avoiding interactions or limiting relationships. At what point does introversion become isolation? What are maybe some warning signs that this isn't just a healthy practice that suits your personality, but instead perhaps harmful?
Yeah, I love that question. And I think you kind of said it in your question a little bit, right? Where's the difference between us it being a personality versus helpful or not helpful? So you want to pay attention to, is this to a point where it's not helpful to me anymore? Mm-hmm. If you're naturally introverted, you need that alone time. You need to energize that way to regroup, be able to give to your family and the people around you. So absolutely 100% take that time, because it's going to make you a better you and better able to serve and be a gift for other people. But if that isolation is getting you to a place where maybe you're feeling more anxious, more irritable, less patient, noticing that your mood is affected in some way, more down, exacerbated, tired, maybe foggy, memory isn't coming out well. So if that's we good. Notice that something's off about us, we're not our normal selves, even the people around us are starting to notice or comment, that could be a sign that it's starting to get to a place where it's not that helpful. Balance is a way to keep that in mind. I know it's cliche and nothing can be perfectly balanced, but we want to think about, more or less in general, are we kind of having a healthy spread? Sometimes there are seasons where we're heavy in one area over another, but in general, do we kind of have that consistency over time? And that's a good way to gauge it as well.
There are so many things that can hold us back from putting ourselves out there. It is a risk. Love is always a risk. So what can you get specific and maybe walk us through the benefits of that challenge, like of kind of putting ourselves in some perhaps not necessarily easily to predict outcomes, but certainly worth it. So if I were, if I'm, you know, talking to my kids, like, yes, this is a hard thing, but it is a good thing. I think that we live in a culture where people are always telling us that easy means good and hard means bad. And so while it might feel like a risk to navigate relationships or introduce ourselves to someone new or start or even have an argument, what are the plus sides of putting ourselves out there is the first part. And then what are the disadvantages of not doing it? Because I know that both of those can have extremes.
Yeah, there's a quote out there about unprocessed emotions, how they're kind of like a stone in your shoe. I'm ad-libbing a little bit, but it's a stone in your shoe. It's just going to be there until we let it come out and discuss it. And it's going to be something that's in between you and that other person. And that's really why the risk is worth it, because we want to get to the other side of whatever that discrepancy is so that we can find healing, reconciliation, and everything be back to where it was, where you're both good. But even in getting to know somebody, yeah, there's a little bit of vulnerability, and everything Brené Brown says about vulnerability is so helpful. She's just done so much research on it, but she talks about that risk, that catch 22. You're kind of darned if you do, darned if you don't, because if we risk, if we open up, if we share something that's important to us, or even just something about ourselves that we feel self-conscious about when we're just sharing with someone, it's a risk because we don't know how this person's going to receive that information. Are they going to be kind? Are they going to make fun of us? And then we also don't know, are they going to keep it private? Are they going to share and spread that around when we were hoping it would be a private conversation? So there's that risk there. And at the same time, we also, if we don't do it, we can't deepen our relationships. We can't have something that's more fruitful and of substance. Then everyone in our lives sort of stays at this acquaintance level. And part of the reason why you have deeper levels of intimacy in your relationships, if you were to think about that scale, if you will, from stranger, acquaintance, work friend, to best friend, to family member, that's because you've had varying levels of risk. You've gone further with those people that you feel closest to. And I would say, just for stage wise, I kind of think back to middle school when you're becoming best friends with some of those initial people. And part of the reason why you feel close to some of those friends in middle school is because, at least from a female perspective, we were sharing secrets. We were talking about our lives, you know, maybe who you had a crush on, things that felt very personal. And you had friends who reciprocated that. They shared similar stories. And so we felt this bond and that experience, sort of those initial ways of learning to socialize. And I think that's what happens is, as you get to know someone, whether you're going out for coffee, you're on a play date and you meet another parent on the playground, there's those initial giving and receiving of vulnerability. So I had a hard time with my kid. They were up all night. You know, what do you guys do? What are you doing for schools as you're researching what type of school you want your child to be in? Or, oh no, my child's in this situation. And somebody else shares, oh, I was in a similar situation. And so there's all this progressive deepening of sharing that lets you know it's safe to continue to share because it's been received well, you've been respected in the sharing, and someone offers something back. And so I think that's what happens really over time with any strong relationship, is it's this reciprocal process of back and forth and honoring the space and receiving each other well in that.
So the benefits of putting ourselves out there is intimacy. And yes. And I do want to get back to the second part of the question, but if I could go a little further in this area. So the second part of the question being, what are the disadvantages of not putting ourselves out there? What can go wrong with us if we just continue to live in isolation and not put our, you know, not do whatever it is that is inevitably going to be worth it if we avoid that? But is it possible that we're giving up too soon? I feel like people really don't talk about conflict, particularly in adult relationships, enough. It's like we think that we're supposed to have this all figured out by now. And if we're doing it right, then we don't bump against each other, that we don't bruise each other, that we just have these perfectly harmonious relationships. And I don't think that's ever true. And so then because we feel like, oh, well, adults aren't supposed to have arguments or aren't supposed to have conflict, we're not, first of all, instructing each other. We're not helping each other. We're not talking about it enough. But we're also perhaps giving up on a good relationship too soon. What do you have to say about persevering through conflict as adults?
Wow, I agree with that 100%. There's so much pressure in our culture to keep everything nice and happy.
Yeah.
And it's almost a cultural expectation here in the US to just keep everything going, mm-hmm. you know, just keep everything happy. We don't want to go there, really. Mm-hmm. And if you go there, it means you're causing a problem. It means you're being difficult for no reason, essentially. You're causing problems. And what trips us up is we have to be willing to go there and have those really hard conversations. I'm not saying it's easy. It's very uncomfortable. Nobody wants to be that person to rock the boat or appear to be causing a problem. But if there's something on your heart that's bothered you, or somebody said something that was offensive in some way, hurtful in some way, talk about it. And it doesn't have to be this big, you know, how dare you? I can't, you're the worst person in the world. How could you have said that? But it can just say, hey, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt, right? I wish that I heard you say something the other day. I'm sure it wasn't intentional, but I want to bring it up to you because it kind of bothered me. And I just want to make sure that we're okay or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And when we offer that olive branch in bringing up our conflict, it goes such a long way for repair. And I think a lot of times people imagine conflict being something that's adversarial. It puts us against the other person and who's going to win. Mm. And it doesn't have to be that way, because if your relationship with that person is important, ideally you're both viewing it as this is something that has the potential to come between us. And what can we do? How can we work together to make sure that it isn't that? What can we do to resolve it and get past it? It's almost like the resurrection, right? Jesus's passion, death, and resurrection. We can't reach that without the cross. So sometimes we have to wade into the discomfort and the struggle of suffering through those tough conversations in order to come out on the other side, redeemed, more fully alive in our relationships. And again, if you think about those people you feel closest to, chances are there's been some conflict somewhere along the way and over the years, and you overcame it. You had a tough conversation and you worked through it. Doesn't have to be huge, but even something small, like about why are you always late or something, you know, it could be, yeah. It doesn't have to be a big thing.
Yeah.
You've worked through something together.
I love you bringing the Paschal mystery into it, because how sweet is life if you haven't experienced death? But then the promise also of yes, death, yes, suffering, yes, death, but there will be new life. And so if two people are committed, if two people, I love the reframe of, hey, here's this thing that could potentially get between us. Let's get rid of this. So I love that. I really appreciate that. Thank you. I do wish more people would be talking about it and teaching and helping us through this instead of feeling like we're doing everything wrong because things come up in friendship. So if you don't mind, let's go back to the second part of the question of there are disadvantages. This is straight up scientific to continuing to live in isolation. Where are some places that this can go that are at best unpleasant and at most unhealthy?
Yeah, we know this. I mean, God designed us to be like him. And we believe in a God who is a Trinity, who exists in relationship, Father, Son, and Spirit. And if we're made in his image and likeness, I interpret that to mean that we are made to be in relationship with other people. And when we do those relationships well, we're more bearing his image and likeness in the world. We're more unified when we do that well. Right. If we're designed for that, we think about our basic human needs, food, shelter, clothing. I want to put healthy relationships as the fourth basic human need after that. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of research on this. I talk about this a little bit in the book, but orphanages, we've heard about those orphanages in the 90s, I think, in Romania. And there were children who were discovered just left to themselves in cribs. And a lot of them died from lack of human contact. They were just left for extended periods of time, not from starvation, not from they were getting those basic needs met, but it was from the lack of human contact that made them either pass away or just have severe developmental situations where they weren't able to speak, something severely impacted them. And so the consequences are huge, right? When we have chronic periods of loneliness, chronic periods of isolation and disconnection, we have anything that can impact our mental health, our physical well-being, and our spiritual well-being as well.
Mm-hmm. Regardless of your personality, whether you're the life of the party or whether you like a small intimate group, we are all designed to belong. Belonging is just so very, very important. And I know that loneliness became a really personal issue for you. Thank you for your vulnerability in your book talking about infertility. Do you mind telling us a little bit about your own struggle with this topic?
Yeah. So my husband and I experienced infertility for years. It's still ongoing, but we had an 8-year period where we were doing all of the tests. And there's sort of this experience that happens after you're married where people ask you, you know, for small talk and conversation, how long have you been married? And then usually the second question is, do you have any kids? And so once we hit about the 2-year mark, people started having questions about why don't you have any kids? What's going on? What are you doing? Little did they realize that we were in the middle of lots of medical tests, you know, blood draws, ultrasounds, medications, surgeries, things like that, right? Trying and really having quite a hard time. You know, in a way, it's a very traumatic experience. You feel like you're healthy one day and the next day you're not. You're like this medical experiment. It was very isolating, especially in a Catholic context. We love babies. Mm-hmm. We celebrate life. And so it felt challenging in a certain way of, you know, do people think I'm Catholic enough, or do they think we're intentionally, you know, not open to life in certain ways? So it was a really hard, isolating experience, especially watching friends get married, starting to have kids, especially people who had been married after us. Very lonely time, feeling very alone because everyone in our community seemed to be moving on and having kids and living that life, but we're kind of hanging out on the side, not really being able to connect with anyone. But what was so beautiful about that time was what really got us through were some close friends who were able to speak into that in a healthy way. You know, there was a mentor couple that we really look up to and admire who's also experienced infertility. So they were able to speak to us from a place of authority. And then some friends, one of my friends who's in religious life, I poured my heart out to her in letters and she just listened and reciprocated, gave her encouragement. And then another friend who I've known since 5th grade, and she has 5 kids, but she was so great at, again, being just a listening ear, not giving me some platitude and making me feel like she had to make it better. She was really willing to sit in the mess and the tough parts about it. And that was phenomenal. So I truly believe without those 3 people in those situations, I don't know how I would have gotten through it.
Yeah. What's your daughter's name?
Kiara. Yes.
Kiara. Praise God for Kiara.
Yes. We are so grateful. We are so grateful for her. So we actually adopted her. So we're so grateful. She's like
wonderful.
A perfect in our family. Yeah.
Wonderful. I also know the starts and stops and heartbreak of things not going as planned. And so not to the degree, but I honor your struggle and thank you for sharing it as bravely as you have and vulnerably. It has blessed many people for certain. So in the book, you say that God's goodness is experienced primarily in relationships. And I also have felt probably the most certain of God's love for me as it is mimicked how when people have loved me well here on earth. I'm like, that's what that means. That's what that is like. That's that mercy. That's that acceptance. And so I really relate to how your friends made you feel during that time. At the same time, my question for you is, people are just people and they are not going to love us perfectly. They are going to let us down. They are not God. What is a good, healthy balance of keeping a strong tie with who God is and freeing our friends and family up that is not their primary position to be to perfectly love us?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, we always want to bring everything back to the Lord as our place for replenishment, for growth, for healing. He's the ultimate source of all of that we need and desire. And I think when we prioritize that, it sort of helps make everything fall into place. And at the same time, making sure you know who those safe people are, who mm-hmm. are the people that are consistently yeah. going to be those people to show up for you, feed your cat when you're out of town, right? Those people who you know. And it's okay if it's only two people,
yes.
one person.
Right.
But we want to be able to know who our go-tos are. And then that way we're not having that expectation of everyone in our life, because that's a lot of pressure too, to expect everyone in our life to be perfect 100% of the time, because that's just, again, not possible. But I think, again, those people who you know are your safe, reliable people, more often than not, at least your chances are better for that to go well. So,
yeah, I feel like loneliness is often, it usually comes after either a refusal on my part to put myself out there or to share something. So there's that lack of vulnerability, right? But then it also can often happen after conflict. So if it's either a lack of putting myself out there or having a problem and feeling like I'm the only one that this is happening to, or I am so misunderstood. And so being able to either embrace risk or push through conflict, those are terribly, terribly scary things. If you could give words of encouragement, if you could give just promises that it's going to be worth it, what would you have to say to people that are struggling with one of those two, either of those two things?
Yeah. And this is all with the caveat that we're understanding that you're not in some serious situation of emotional abuse, neglect, some type of, that your safety is okay. But this is assuming
good point.
A generally healthy relationship, that absolutely it's completely worth it. Because if we're not, I like to think of conflict almost like an opportunity for growth, an opportunity to grow closer to the other person. So if when we do conflict well, your relationship's going to be that much stronger. I think about couples that I've worked with where infidelity has taken place. You know, maybe they've been married 20 years, somebody had an affair, and they're really trying to work things out. One of the inside jokes that I've said to people before, I'm like, oh my goodness, like you, once you guys come out on the other side of this, you're going to be able to walk around and look at other people's marriages and say, oh, you're complaining about your husband not filling the dishwasher. Like, oh my goodness, like take a seat. Let me teach you something about what's important and what's valuable, because you've been through the ringer. You know how to deal with this conflict, and you've been able to come out on the other side really being stronger than ever. And so if we can look at even the most minor conflicts as an opportunity to for growth, to get to know somebody in a whole new way, and to really fortify a relationship, it's going to be that much stronger when we're willing to go there. So it's absolutely worth it when we do it well. And again, it doesn't have to be perfect, but if in our willingness, our disposition of heart, if we're approaching it openly, again, giving the other person the benefit of the doubt, it's going to just pave the way for that increased opportunity for reconciliation and strengthening your bond.
If you're familiar with Heather Thompson Day, she does a lot of work around conflict and friendship relationships in general. But she was talking about how that there are rules of friendship and we very seldomly share our rules with each other. And so we will enter into relationship with a certain set of expectations. And then the other person has a certain set of expectations. We never communicate what those expectations are. And then we end up disappointing each other in ways that are a complete surprise to both of us. And then it's so much easier these days to metaphorically push block instead of, this really hurt my feelings. This is something that's really important to me. And then giving the other person an opportunity to say, I had no idea. That's so easy.
Right. I'm so sorry. Oh my goodness. Right.
But how would you, and with that, I don't mind putting you on the spot here because you're such a pro, but in that circumstance, how would you start a conversation with perhaps a new friendship of, here are the rules of friendship to me. What are the rules of friendship to you? How would you model that conversation for us if you could?
Ooh, this is fun. Okay. So one way I'm thinking about it, what you just said a second ago is, what does friendship look like for you? So first of all, how would you define the word friendship? So this could be kind of weird, especially if you don't know the person that well, getting into a philosophical discussion about friendship. But I kind of think it would be fun to say, what do you mean when you say the word friend? What does that, because for each person, that could be different. For someone, that could be, we're talking on the phone every day for at least 30 minutes. For another person, that could be, you know, see you once every 3 months. And, you know, we send memes in between or something.
Yeah.
And so what do you even mean when you say friend? And then, I would love to see a conversation around, what do you envision that friendship being between you and I? What type of friend do you feel like you have the capacity for at this point in your life? And how do you see us working that out, fitting into it? Because I feel like there's something here. I'm connecting with you. I feel like there's a nice vibe. And so what would that look like? Here's kind of what I would envision and what I would like. Does that fit with what you're envisioning?
Because we've all been in the stands with, I'm just picturing my kids in sports or whatever. And so there's a mom that maybe it's because she cheers for her kid like me. Maybe it's because we rolled our eyes at the same thing. Maybe it's because we're wearing the same shoes. I don't know. But there's something little usually that makes you think, I might like you. So much so that we might say, hey, what are you doing after this? Or we should get coffee sometime. And then when that first conversation happens, where you're both kind of leaning in a little bit and making each other laugh or whatever the things that constitute a good date for you. And then it's like, do we want to do this? Do you want to be my friend? Circle yes or no. And then having this proposed conversation, like you're saying, of, well, I don't know. What does that mean? And then the expectations are the same. And then maybe that next conversation is around, these are the things that can really hurt my feelings. And maybe it feels like the language is too strong to say, what are your deal breakers? But kind of, what are your deal breakers?
Sure. Yeah. And I think it can be something that evolves over time too. I think it's okay to not have all of that out on the table the first time you're hanging out or the first couple of times. But certainly if something were to come up in the conversation or the experience, you want to take advantage of those opportunities to say, oh man, just so you know, for the future reference, this is something that's really important to me, or I get pretty heated about this topic. Hopefully that's not going to be a problem for you, because you know, in the future, I might go off on my little soapbox when this issue comes up or something. And that's a way to feel it out as you go along, I guess.
Well, and even then, conversely, so here are the things that really hurt me. Here are the things that really make me feel loved and celebrated and attended to.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably pretty, but it's a risky, again, the risk of having that conversation, but the rewards are probably pretty great.
Yeah. And you could even share it through personal stories too, I think, right? So as you're offering more about your own life, here's this thing that just happened to me recently that really bothered me. By the way, this is like a huge pet peeve of mine, just so you know, right? There's all these opportunities to weave it in.
So if you could leave us with just maybe some bullet-pointed, simple advice to live more connectedly, could you bring it down to a couple of things that you think we should be doing differently?
Intentional time is number one. I know people feel awkward about that because they're saying, oh my gosh, I want it to be organic. If it's scheduled, then does it mean it's really authentic and genuine? Yes, it is genuine. We all live very full lives. And so take the time to be intentional and put it on the calendar. Make sure you're going out of your way to do that so that you have the foundation of those people that you feel closest with. And then when you have that intentional time, is it quality time? Is it something where we can actually be sharing our hearts? Doesn't have to be all the time. Fun is great too. But do we have those opportunities for deeper conversation? So intentional time, deeper conversation, fun is a great way to grow closer to someone as well. I think just general FaceTime hours, time spent with somebody really helps. So you want to get that time in. Intentional time, deep conversation, fun, time in general. And then I would say not being afraid to risk when the time comes. If there's a conflict or just opening up in general, taking those chances and those opportunities, you can always start in a small way and then build up to things that are more significant for you as a way to practice. But being willing to push yourself a little bit out of that comfort zone for the sake of the friendship and see what happens.
I know as a mom, there is nothing that delights me more than watching my kids cooperate, like watching my kids enjoy one another. So I can't imagine how it must please the Lord to watch his children delight in one another and join in friendship and companionship. If you could leave us with something that you're hopeful for, what would that be? What are you hopeful for, Regina?
Oh my goodness. I'm hopeful for so much. I feel like there's so many people in the world right now wanting the good of others and willing to put themselves out there in certain ways to will the good of the other person. I think, you know, you're a great example of that, of how having this platform and just letting people hear stories. But so in all of these small ways, how are we willing to extend ourselves more on behalf of another person? And when the more I see that, the more hopeful I become, because I'm like, oh my goodness, these are incredible examples to follow. And it makes me so hopeful about the future that there's still a lot of people out there who genuinely want the good for ourselves and for other people and for the world.
Yeah. And really creating environments where you're getting to see that. I feel like you can't, it is possible to create an environment, whether through social media or online technology in general, where it is one dreadful thing after another. So I've just been trying to be intentional about not hiding from the world, but certainly balancing the good and hopeful. Well, thank you. How can we follow you? How can we yell about your important work? Where would you like us to gather and celebrate you?
Oh my goodness. So I'm on Instagram at Boyd Counseling Services, Boyd Counseling Services on Instagram. You can go to my website, reginaboyd.com. So those would be great places to start and to hang out.
Awesome. Everyone, please go buy a copy of Leaving Loneliness Behind by Regina Boyd. Buy two copies so that you have one for yourself and one to give to a friend. I am just grateful for all of the ways that you're helping us connect. Belonging is so important to our mental health and our well-being. And I celebrate you and the work that you're doing. And I'm so happy to finally meet you in person.
Yes, thank you so much. Me too. It's been great.
I hope that you come back. Thank you so much. Good morning, Beefinator.
Hi, Beefy Beef.
So I have had a terrible morning.
I'm so sorry.
I just botched an interview that I was excited to have with Regina.
I believe that 0%.
Well, the thing is that I could get really down about the events of this morning, which I will actually keep private. I am going to email them to Regina. She was so lovely.
Aww.
I know. But the reason that I do not feel like this is catastrophic or even really anything to not be able to come back from is because I'm talking to you right now.
Yay!
I have a beef. And so I was just thinking of the very, we've been best friends since we were 8, as most listeners know by now. But I was thinking of how many probably pretty severe mental health effects of loneliness have been dodged because of a very lasting best friend. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking that what you and I could do, because I wish that for everyone, and yes. I hate, you and I take no credit for the beauty of our friendship.
And we do not take it for granted.
And we, yes, exactly. But we're also not like patting ourselves on the back, like, oh, this is really, and that doesn't mean that it's not hard work. That doesn't mean that a lot of our gifts don't go into it. But I know I actually don't feel like it's hard work, but like, how can you say that and feel right about it? But right, and anyways, but the point is that we're not like, you know, carrying around a trophy about what wonderful friends we are. I've been a very mediocre friend to you at times, and you have persisted in love. And what I would like for us to do, because we wish that for everyone, we pray that for our children, the special, unique, trusting, lasting, perseverant bond that we have been able to have, I was thinking that maybe we could go through a couple of things that we think have been crucial to maintaining it for people that really, really wish they had it.
Okay.
So what are the things that you think we do really well?
Okay.
Just one. Just come up with one.
Okay. You do not know this, so this is very fun to talk about. I don't even know where, but I just found a picture of a letter that I wrote to you and Seth, that like Mike and I wrote to you and Seth. I signed it from both of us after we had had a particularly challenging season. I don't even remember writing it. I think I took a picture of it to send it to Mike to be like, is this the words? Like, do you like these words? And it was just thanking y'all for carrying us through a season. And how you had been so generous. And basically what I was saying without expressly saying is we have not given very much at all lately, and y'all have, and we just like see that and are grateful for it and are so thankful. And so I think it's that we know that those seasons happen, right? And that we sometimes take turns in that. I, at this very moment, can't remember a time where we've reciprocated that, but hopefully we have at some point.
Oh my gosh. I can.
And just knowing that after, you know, 800 years of friendship, that there's seasons. And I mean, it's somewhat like a marriage, right? Like it's not 50-50. It's whatever the other person isn't able to do right then. And you just stay flexible and committed to the marathon of the relationship.
Yeah. I like the commitment that you speak of. There's something about our commitment, even when I'm not doing my best, I'm not showing up certainly what's best for you, but not even what's best for myself. Like I'm just not my best version of myself right now. I never have to worry about, is your affection going to be contingent on how I'm performing? I don't ever have to wonder that. So there's this story that I am sure you've heard me tell many times, but it's basically a wife gets really disappointed by her husband. Mm. He hurts her feelings. He forgot about a date. It was an anniversary date. He promised her he was going to be on time. Not only was he not on time, but he was late, and then he came home and then he fell asleep, and she was dressed and ready to go. He wakes up and is horribly regretful. It's like, oh my gosh, what just happened? Okay, let's go now. And she was like, no, I'm in bed now. And she looked at him and he feels terrible. And she says, I know that you love me. Yes, my feelings are hurt, but I know that you love me.
Yes.
And there is something about that assurance that we don't have to be our best all the time. You're not going to be a perfect friend to me. I'm not going to be a perfect friend to you. But I know that you love me.
Right.
And there's something in that assurance that makes me my best to you, that makes you your best to me.
Yes.
I feel very perfectly loved, even if the circumstances aren't exactly that.
Well, and I think like related to that is that no moment is ever just about that moment, right? Like our relationship is the context of our entire relationship past and where we want it to be in the future, right? And so any day, any circumstance is always in the context of something much bigger and much greater.
Yeah. When I think about the benefits of not just having one thing that Regina talked about was having a safe place, like a safe friend. There is a friend that you can say anything and everything to, deciding who those people are. And, you know, we are not each other's only friend. We have strong relationships around us. What is something that determines safety to you? If you were going to be vulnerable or tell someone something, because we have other relationships, you have other safe people, like besides just me, although I might be the safest. what are aspects of their friendship that makes someone feel safe to you? Like, I can either bring up something difficult between us, not you and me, but in the friendship. I can bring up something difficult in the friendship. I can say something vulnerable that I'm not proud of. I can make a confession. I can make an apology. What makes someone feel safe to you?
The reason why I struggle with it is because it seems so obvious, but maybe it's not to everybody. And it's just a lack of judgment, right? There's nothing worse than feeling like you have to come to a conversation with a bunch of like wind up, right? Like, I need to help you understand why I think this way and where I was experiencing before and why today might not be my best day and what else is going on, so that I can give you a context so that you can see what I mean right now. To be able to just step over all that and just jump into the story and trust that the other person is going to not be judgmental and either do that work for you, like understand, like, okay, that's a little off for her, but I understand that there must be a lot more going on without even knowing it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think just coming to someone with that you can not have to overthink your words and just be vulnerable and transparent with, because you know they're going to either not need to do that work or do it for you without you having to over-explain things.
And assume the best. Yeah, yes. Assume the best. For me, it's, can I show you this soft side, hurt side, mad side? Can I show you this thing that seems and feels ugly to me? And will you not go away? Like, are you, mm-hmm. are you still in? Mm-hmm. here's this thing that's imperfect. Here's this thing that might be off-putting. Are you still in? So if I feel like someone is going to use information against me in some way. So again, I feel like for me, it goes back to that assurance of, I know that you love me. I know that this isn't great. I know that this is not my best moment, but I know that you love me.
Right. And the loyalty too, right?
Yes. Yeah. I guess it is. It's about loyalty. So, 'cause I don't mind someone being like, okay, it's not the best. It's not the best.
Of course.
Probably could have said some things different here, but okay, let's figure this out. There's like a stick with itness for me that's really important. Yeah.
Right, for sure. What it makes me think of is, I say this in a lot of different contexts, work included, but your current situation is only as bad as your next best option. Right. Like, so if something crazy is happening at work and you know that you could like walk out the door that day, right? Like, mm-hmm. the situation isn't that bad. So any life situation is only as bad as my next best option, which is being able to call you and talk about it and work through it and feel supported. Mm-hmm. And I cannot, and we've talked about this before, I cannot imagine living through so many of life experiences if I didn't know that at the end of the day, I would have you to call and have joined me in like shaking my fist or sobbing on the ground or, you know, a gentle rebuke if that's what I need to like have a conversation about, like how I could have done something better. Just honest, loyal, non-judgmental, safe connection and feedback about the beef.
I do too. We are blessed. And I wish that for everyone. I wish a long-lasting, trusting, loving, accepting, non-judgmental connection for everyone. And I believe in it. I God designed it. When I think of friend and God's design for it, I think of you. So grateful.
Love you, Beefy Beef.
Love you. I am so, so grateful for you, listener. If you liked this episode, could you please do me a favor and hit subscribe and leave a review? It really helps the show grow, and I would be so appreciative. Thank you so much to our guests who share their gifts so generously with us, and a special thank you to Taylor Schroll, who does so much behind the scenes to make the show great. If it weren't for him, I would still be in my closet with my iPhone. You can follow along at Forte Catholic as well. That's Taylor's show where I show up now and again. And to keep up more regularly, please follow along on Instagram at Allison M. Sully or TikTok at Sullivan Family TikTok. See you next week.
Today's show was a production of Allison Sullivan in conjunction with the Forte Catholic Podcast Network. For more great Catholic podcasts, head on over to fortecatholic.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.